This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Canadians pay some of the highest cell service prices in the world, handing the big three billions every year.
Why is Canada so expensive?
I'm a real estate agent in Toronto. My cell phone is my life.
But service isn't always great.
We would simply like to get what we're paying for.
I have to complain every single month.
I pay $110 a month with poor to no reception.
And that's driving discontent.
I think most cell phone servers in Canada are severely overcharging.
Where's the competition?
Competing claims about Canadian wireless and internet pricing have been going on for years, with consumers and consumer groups pointing to studies that indicate Canada has some of the highest pricing in the world, while the industry, and more recently the government, suggest that costs are coming down and that you get what you pay for. A recent tweet from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau put the debate back on the agenda, as he tweeted that, and I'll quote, "We've cut the cost of cell phone plans in half since 2019, in part by increasing competition." Now, is that true? What's the real state of Canadian wireless competition, and how does our pricing compare with other countries? To help answer those questions, I'm joined this week on the podcast by David Silberman, professor of marketing at the Rotman School of Management at the University of Toronto and the Canadian National Chair of Strategic Marketing. Professor Silberman's research is focused on understanding how the operation of markets is affected by the exchange of information between organizations and customers, relationships within the distribution channel, and the introduction of innovations to markets. David, welcome to the podcast.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining me. You know, debating the state of Canadian communications pricing, whether wireless or broadband services, I think has almost become a national sport in Canada in recent years. But it's pretty fair to say that by now there's a pretty broad sense that Canadians pay a lot, at least relative to other countries, for these services. Yet we certainly see the telecom companies and I think even more recently, the government itself trying to put a bit of a different spin on it. I'd say that culminated in a recent tweet from the Prime Minister where he touted a 50% decline in wireless prices. So I was hoping we could try to set the record straight and perhaps identify how, you know, prices can still seemingly be high relative to other countries, but prices can also be declining in certain respects. Why don't we start with the state of Canadian pricing relative to other countries? You know, essentially, how do we rank? What does the data say? And I know that the government just released its latest benchmark study on the issue.
Listen, in Canada, I think we pay some of the highest prices in the world, at least in developed countries. This is based for sort of mobile phone service and certainly for data. So when you look at, there's all kinds of measures, but whether it's $5 to $7 per gigabyte that we actually pay on average, these are fairly high rates when you compare to sort of other countries that have comparable, what I would say, standards of living. And, you know, we're not comparing ourselves with developing countries or countries that are in a very different situation. So when you compare yourself with countries in Europe, at least, that have similar economic structures, we pay a lot more. And I think that's the source of frustration for Canadians, because especially when you travel abroad and you go to France and you buy yourself a SIM card, which gives you almost unlimited data for a month and your own French phone number, and you paid, I don't know, 25 euros. And you're like, man, I paid 25 euros in the first week of my mobile phone service in Canada. People get a bit frustrated.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, and certainly the experience people have when they leave the country in particular, they see some of those relative pricing. And the recent report, the so-called Wall report, which has been benchmarking this for many years, highlighted exactly some of the countries that you're just mentioning, especially some of the European countries, but not exclusively so, that have some of those high prices. So all this really, in some ways, begs the question, you know, why? You know, why are Canadian prices so high? And, you know, why has, in some ways, this issue seemingly been so intractable?
Well, I think there's probably insufficient competition. I think that we've all probably heard that. In our in our market. There are pretty strict rules about foreign ownership. A foreign company can acquire a company as long as it has less than 10% of the market. But since each of them have about a third, that kind of locks that out. And as for ownership of an existing player, the best a foreign owner can do is to get 48%. And that's through some kind of complex analysis. If it's owned by via another company, which is 66% owned by Canadians, you're never going to get to majority ownership. So I guess one of the questions that one would ask is, how would a new player in the market affect the existing players? And the issue is they could put a bit of pressure on them. Sprint was here for a while, probably more than 15 years ago, but they exited quickly. And I think one of the things is when a company comes in, is it going to actually build its own infrastructure, or is it going to rent space from an existing player? And in that regard, regulation can play a role in sort of trying to facilitate competition, but that hasn't been the case in our market to a large degree. Many of the smaller mobile operators are actually owned by the big three, and so we kind of have an impression of choice and competition, but that's a bit illusory in my view.
Can we drill down just a little bit more on that? There has been certainly talk of the MVNO approach, the mobile virtual network operator approach, where rather than building all new facilities, you use some of the existing facility you invest some in your own, but certainly not recreating the entire network from scratch, and the sense that that sort of regulated competition could help. But based on what you've just suggested, your studies suggest that just hasn't had the kind of impact one might have, or the regulations haven't gone as far as they might otherwise need to.
Yes, I mean, I think it's a combination of the two. You sort of see something which looks like a disruption in the marketplace, you know, when Fido or Virgin Mobile came in, but then when they're acquired by the bigger companies, and yes, their prices are a bit lower, but their sort of coverage and quality is not quite as good. And then on top of that too, we have to be honest, the way that the big three have in some ways blocked the market progress of these smaller brands is through joining the services that the companies sell. So Bell also provides broadband service. It also provides television service. It also provides security service. So when you're a homeowner, what you do is you group all of those services together and you get a discount. But essentially, that's a way of keeping prices for mobile phone services high. So, I mean, it's very clever, but Rogers has done that, and so has TELUS. And so, you know, we all know this. You know, I know this in my own context. We sort of have a contract with Bell, but, you know, I have family members involved on the mobile phone plan. We also get our television service. We also get our broadband service, and we pay this large amount. And I can tell you it's substantial, and it's much higher than in other countries. I just had the fortune of being on sabbatical in France last year from January to December 2023. And having rented a house there, I had to get basically internet service at the house. And I also had to get phone service. And my total bill every month was less than 40 euros. And I had unlimited mobile phone service. I had amazing internet service. And I had television service, exactly what I've got here, for 40 euros, $60. The same thing I'm paying here, more than $200. So, and I think even when you buy mobile phone service by itself in France, the prices are much, much better.
Yeah. So the bundling approach, you're right, is something that we see a lot in Canada. And, you know, it certainly helps entrench some of those larger players and gives the feeling that you're getting some discounts. But you know, once you start drilling down on some of the individual pricing and at least how much consumers continue to spend on wireless, those prices remain high. So, I mean, that's a great example in terms of sort of the comparative costs that people are facing. But yet, at the same time, we see the Prime Minister talking about pricing cut in half. We see StatsCan saying that some of their analysis suggests that pricing is coming down. So how do we, you know, what's there when you start examining the details that help explain why when people go elsewhere or you look at some of the studies, they say, yes, Canada remains an expensive place. But at the same time, we are seeing, at least on some packages, the price come down.
That's a great question. I think one of the things to remember is that often when we sign up for mobile phone service or sign a contract, it lasts 24 months. In fact, I mean, it was only about 10 years ago or so that they were shortened to 2 years. Before that time, they were longer. But even 2 years is a long time. And when you take a look at the numbers that the Prime Minister was referring to, they're basically prices that are determined based on the current offerings and the current promotions available in the market. But the reality is what percentage of the people are able to go out and do the shopping today at those prices, able, and what percentage actually do. And so that's one thing, is that those are based on current prices, what you could choose. But a lot of people are still locked into contracts for 2 years, and so they can't take advantage of those contracts. And the second point is that one of the things that has actually led to a decrease is the fact that many of these plans now include added data. And in many cases, we don't actually make full use of the data allowance we have on our plans. So once again, it makes some of the price reductions look bigger than they actually are.
You know, that part is very interesting. This notion that consumers effectively, you know, may be paying the same or more in some instances on packages, but they may be viewed as cheaper because they're getting more for their money, so to speak, in terms of more data. And yet, if you're not using that data, is it really a better deal?
Well, that's right. And I think for sure, when you actually analyze a different set of data, which is the average revenue per user, which is a standard metric used in the mobile phone industry, you will see that the so-called decline has been nothing like 50%. In fact, if anything, it's more or less been flat for many years. Now, people are probably using more data, but at the same time, the actual costs that companies incur to provide that services are minimal compared to, let's say, the fact that we're paying so much more in Canada versus what people are able to pay in other countries for the same level of service.
Yeah, I want to sort of pause there, because I think you've made a really essential point, and that is this notion of ARPU, the average revenue per user, because it, you know, from the certainly when, and you know, one of the things that why I was happy you were able to come on is getting a business perspective on some of these issues. The business side that looks at the wireless sector, looks at communications more broadly in Canada, tends to use that as the core metric. I mean, they're looking at how much are users spending. And, you know, when politicians want to talk about the decline in prices, they may focus on lower advertised prices. But I take it from your comments that the ARPU side, the part that at the end of the day matters most to businesses, how much are consumers spending each month on these services, that hasn't come anywhere close to the kinds of declines that the government and others have been touting.
That's exactly right. And I think, I mean, for sure, we have to also think about what kind of a business this is. You have certain businesses like, for example, retailing, which is primarily a business that's based on variable costs. What do I mean by that? The main costs that Loblaws has are the money that they pay to manufacturers and to producers of food, and they mark it up. That's their business. But the telecommunications industry is quite different. Their variable costs are close to zero, but their main costs are fixed costs. And what this actually means is that revenue per user is almost perfectly correlated with profitability.
That's interesting. Although, you know, certainly if there were, you know, if we had a representative from a telecom company on the panel, they would say it may be true that once we've built the network, the additional costs we face to run the traffic are relatively modest. But they'll say that where, you know, the difference between them and a Loblaws is the CapEx, the capital expenditures that Loblaws may undertake. There may be some significant ones, certainly in terms of real estate and other kinds of, and developing inventory, whatever that the focus happens to be. But they would say, listen, building a network is crazy expensive. And so that's, you know, that's where the cost comes from. So, essentially, who do we believe in all of this, or how do we ensure that on the one hand, we continue to get the kind of investment that is needed to have world-class networks, but at the same time, ensure that we've got competitive pricing. And as we've talked about, even with some of the consumer declines, it sounds like they're still spending the same or more as they always have. And that is still today far more than what consumers in other places tend to spend.
So in an industry like this, where the main source of costs are fixed costs and investment, the role of government needs to sort of think about two things. One is coordination, and the other is facilitating money coming in. So just to give you an idea about coordination, where the role is, there was a time here in Toronto, it's recently been resolved, where only one company was actually supplying mobile phone service in the TTC. Now, Rogers actually bought the company that was involved in providing that service. And then there was a row because only Rogers customers could get it. And finally, the government intervened and said, you guys have to figure this out, because based on safety for travelers, everyone needs to be able to use their phone in as much of the network as possible. And so now it's being solved, and it doesn't matter whether you're a TELUS or whether you're Bell or whether you're Rogers. Ultimately, throughout the TTC, everyone's going to be able to use their phones. And I think there's two things. One is that brings us up to a world standard, but it's also going to make it safer for people traveling in Toronto. But what's important there is the government actually needed to intervene and put pressure on these companies, because the market solution was not to our benefit. The other thing relates to if your main expense are fixed costs, you have to make sure that we can access money and access investment as cheaply and as efficiently as possible. That doesn't exist right now. We are basically saddled with a perspective on the telecommunications industry that, in my view, dates from another era, when what we thought is that we had to protect cultural sovereignty in Canada by making sure that our entire telecommunications industry was Canadian owned. Well, the reality is, yes, for the production of Canadian content and for the Canadian arts scene, this was important. But the companies that are providing mobile phone service don't do much for Canadian cultural sovereignty, nor do they do very much in terms of helping the Canadian arts scene. The real issue here is that we're sort of suffering from regulations that were meant to do one thing, and they're sort of stopping us from accessing the funds that are needed to actually have the most efficient and effective systems possible. Now, that's one side. But on the other side, too, we also have the consumer side, which is if you actually had, as opposed to three big companies, four big companies, or five big companies, I think you would also see better pricing on the demand side for Canadians.
Yeah. Do you think that the Canadian market, and this is one of the arguments that the telecom companies raised, do you think the Canadian market can accommodate, say, five large players, or even four large players? There's obviously been some effort to try to focus a bit on a fourth player, and we've seen that with mergers and now with Videotron playing its role. You know, what's your thoughts on what the Canadian market can sustain? Because certainly the argument that they'll come back is we're small, at least in terms of population, not in geography, which of course is another area of focus they often make, is they say it's expensive to provide service in a country as large as Canada. And they'll claim that you just can't have that much competition. In a sense, almost it's too much competition is what they'll claim. How would you respond?
I would say based on the profits they're making, I don't believe them. I think we could easily sustain four or five big companies. And I also think their arguments about us being a very, you know, thinly populated country, and therefore it's also not valid. The fact of the matter is something like 95% of Canadians live in big cities. 95% of our population lives within 150 miles of the U.S. border. And the key thing too is, you're going to make the vast majority of Canadians happier, even if in only the densely populated parts of the country we were able to get more competitive prices. If you were able to get more competitive prices in the Montreal-Windsor corridor, in the Calgary-Edmonton corridor, in the Vancouver area, and in a couple of other metropolitan areas in Canada, you would probably have 80 or 85% of the population enjoying the benefits of more competition. I admit we have an issue. I mean, this issue also exists in terms of transportation. The point is that one has to try to find a balance between the need for competition and the need to provide services and affordable services to Canadians that live in places like Churchill, Manitoba, or Canadians that live in Yellowknife. Yes, that's an issue, but the cost of trying to figure out solutions to that is more than worth it if we're able to get a more competitive sector in terms of providing mobile telecommunications to Canadians at globally competitive prices.
Why don't we sort of conclude here with really the question of, you know, what can be done? You've highlighted, I think, a bit on what government can do. You know, is there something beyond just trying to facilitate new entrants? I'm curious, the example of what took place in Toronto with the TTC is a really good one of how it took government intervention to change the kind of access that was available in a network. And it took real safety concerns for the government to recognize that that kind of intervention was necessary. You know, are there other things government can be doing? And I guess the flip of that, you know, what can consumers be doing? Is there, you know, even in the current environment, is there something that Canadian consumers should be thinking about when it comes to their bills with respect to wireless services or even some of their basic broadband services?
Well, I think government in many ways reflects the desires and the motivations of operators in Canada and people within Canada. And so, you know, one of the things that we should sort of do is when we make political choices is we should try to support politicians who we think want to ensure the strength of our competition laws and ensuring that companies actually do compete. And, you know, there's been a lot of noise from Ottawa about that, but frankly, there's not been very much action yet. And the Liberals have been in power for a long time. I'm not saying they're not. I mean, we had the same situation with the previous administration, which was conservative. So I think Canadians need to sort of decide if this is something they want and try to put pressure on politicians to do that. I think from the consumer side, one of the things that I would say is if you are a judicious shopper and you watch what's going on, you can definitely get better deals. So point number one, I would say, is the minute that your contract ends, don't just keep paying the bill mechanically every month. If you go out and shop around, that in and of itself puts pressure on the telecommunications companies. And the problem is in Canada, we have just too many people that are a bit too lazy about doing that. And so that's something that if you do, if every time your contract ends, you say, okay, that's it, I'm done with Rogers. I'm going to go and I'm going to look. And if Fido or Bell or Public Mobile or Videotron is giving me a better deal, that's where I'm going to go. You know what? That in itself is a way of disciplining what the companies do. And I think not enough of us do that.
No, and I think you're right that they don't do that. Although one of the ironies is that, you know, Fido is owned by Rogers. And so in the world that we find ourselves, you end up with the big brands, the flanker brands, and sometimes it feels like it's an illusion of choice as opposed to the actual choice. And I think that brings us back to the competition point you made.
But what I would say is if, you know, the Fido deal is better, you're still going to be better off yourself. And at the same time, you know, if there's more competition between that, what I would call the flanker brands, that's still going to force these companies. One thing that's absolutely true about any market you can imagine is when markets become more price sensitive, prices come down, period. It always happens because that's what the optimal behavior of players is in such a market. And the whole issue is How do you become more price sensitive? By looking for better deals.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a role for consumers. If consumers want better prices, they need to more aggressively focus on it. And you've also identified a number of things that governments can be doing as well to help incent some of that kind of competition. David, thanks so much for breaking it down. It starts to make a lot more sense how there can be these claims about reduced prices, but at the end of the day, prices still remain high, and then becomes really incumbent on people concerned with that to take action. Thanks so much again for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter @LawBitesPod or Michael Geist @MGeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.